This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Madeline Brand is away, but she left the third and final part of her interview with Jane Mayer about Jane's new book, The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals. Yesterday, Jane explained that she thinks the administration's interrogation policy and other extraordinary measures can be traced to Vice President Dick Cheney and his staff. Today's part of the interview begins with a question about what's known as rendition, capturing suspected terrorists wherever they are and then flying them around the world to secret prisons. Madeline asked Jane Mayer whether she thinks rendition is still taking place.
The policy is still on the books. The programs are still on the books. But whether they're actively being used at this moment, it seems to me doubtful because of the amount of controversy they've stirred now.
But yet we still don't know how many people were taken to these black sites, nor do we know really what happened to them.
No, I mean, and as a journalist and somebody who's been trying to cover this story for a couple of years now, I think that one of the most valuable things that could happen in the political debate and or with during this election year and maybe with the next president and next attorney general would be just trying to get the facts of this story. You know, I tried to get as many as I could in this book, and there's some phenomenal stories that you can already put together, but there are great gaps still. And in some ways, I think it's going to take someone with a subpoena. For instance, members of Congress need to really kind of get involved. And it probably takes somebody with national security clearances so that they can really make independent judgments about whether or not these documents need to be hidden, because tremendous quantities of these documents have been held back from the public.
Jane, it's not just enhanced interrogation techniques or whatever you want to call them and these black sites that are part of your book, but you also talk about the Terrorist Surveillance Program, or TSP. And there was an extraordinary debate within the Justice Department over this program. Now, we've just revisited this with the debate over the wiretapping legislation in Congress. Now, take us back to when this was being debated within the administration and before any of us had even heard about it or knew that this program was in place.
Well, this is in 2004, and what's going on inside the White House is there was a parallel process both for terrorist surveillance programs and for torture. What happened was there were a number of lawyers who really had sort of crises of conscience inside the Bush administration. You know, there were a number of people who I think showed tremendous courage and who I really came to admire for what they did, because they basically said, we're not going to break the laws here. We're going to keep the country inside the rule of law. And some of these programs simply are not legal. We cannot condone them. And that happened with the terrorist surveillance program. It also happened with the torture program. And the lawyers that stood up for the rule of law in this, are some of them have been known before, Jack Goldsmith, for instance, but there's a lot more about his struggle in here. And another is a lawyer named Dan Levin, who actually it went to such lengths to try to figure out really what was torture and what's not torture that he wound up waterboarding himself, or having himself waterboarded, and also putting himself through other forms of sort of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques. But at any rate, they tried to stop these practices, which they saw as not lawful, and they came into direct conflict with top people in the White House, in particular with Cheney, with Addington, with Gonzalez, who tried to ram it through anyway. And there is a famous scene that's been written about a lot about when John Ashcroft became very ill and was in the hospital and transferred his powers to Jim Comey, who was his deputy. And it was right at that moment that the top people in the White House tried to get Ashcroft, even though he was seen to be almost on his deathbed, to sign on to these programs, because some of the lawyers around Ashcroft thought that the president, vice president, and the attorney general and the White House counsel were trying to take advantage of him in his diminished state to push through something that they really thought was not legal.
So they raced to his bedside in the middle of the night in a hospital, and James Comey gets there first and tells him not to sign this piece of legislation.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the things that happen inside the Bush administration were like things that you see in you know, thriller novels, really. And some of the characters were equally good and strong. I think people who were cynical about Washington would be surprised to see the lengths that some of the lawyers inside this administration and some of the FBI officers and some of the military officers actually too went to stand up for the rule of law.
And then after that incident, though, remarkably, James Comey is so paranoid that he thinks he's being wiretapped.
Well, this is, I think, a wonderful illustration of what the atmosphere was like in there. It became so intimidating. At a certain point, the people who opposed Cheney and Addington felt that they were going to face terrible retaliation. And as you say, at one point, Comey, the number two person at the Justice Department, and Jack Goldsmith, who ran the Office of Legal Counsel, a terrifically powerful office there, were trying to withdraw some of these memos that they saw as flawed. And they knew they were going to get such flack from Cheney and his lawyer that they were afraid that they were either in physical danger or maybe being wiretapped. And so they started talking in codes to each other. The upshot was that Goldsmith managed to withdraw the memo, but felt he had to quit almost on the spot.
Well, a lot of these renegades, as you say, did have to quit or did leave the White House, leave the administration. James Comey's no longer there. Neither is Jack Goldsmith. Many of them left.
It's one of the sad things about this is that many, many good people, Republican, Democrat, nonpartisan people, the experts, again, in the FBI in particular, most of the people who really clashed on the idea of torture got driven out, and they took great expertise with them. You know, at the end of the day, I wound up talking to a historian named Philip Zelikow, who was the counselor to Condoleezza Rice. So he's a Republican lawyer. He was also the executive director of the 9/11 Commission. And I was trying to get his perspective on all this. He, too, has left the government by this point. And he basically said he thinks that this whole period and the use of torture by the United States will be seen as a blot sort of similar to the Japanese internment during World War II by FDR. And he said that he thought it happened for many of the same reasons and in much the same way. And basically, he said, and I thought it was just an astounding quote from someone who was actually part of this administration at one point. He said, "Fear and anxiety were exploited by zealots and fools."
Jane Mayer, thank you very much.
So great to be with you. Thanks a lot for having me.
That's New Yorker writer Jane Mayer. She has a new book out. It's just published this week. It's called The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals.
You can hear the other two parts of Madeline's interview at NPR.org. Each day we've run this interview, we have asked the White House to comment on Jane Mayer's book, and the White House has not responded.